It's time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky, and today we're going to be talking with Maddie Dykewald, who is the co-founder of AgeWave and a best-selling author. As a matter of fact, I have a copy of her book right here, Ageless Aging. And Maddie, I think you just came out with a paperback version of the book. So introduce yourself and tell us about the new book.
Sure. Good morning, or afternoon, wherever you happen to be. How are you, Andrew? And thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah, I've been digging deep into aging, longevity, the new retirement for close to 40 years. So probably longer than some of your listeners have even been alive. And I really am interested in the cutting edge research and information that's out there when it comes to longevity, when it comes to what we call health span and brain span, and even something that people are starting to talk about, and that is joy span. So, yeah, I've been lucky enough to have the opportunity to interact with some of the top experts like Mark Hyman and Andrew Weil, Rudy Tanzi, who have been generous with their ideas and thoughts and helping me to understand, well, what's the secret sauce? What are the challenges and what are the ways that we can help women and also men live better longer? And so, yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I really appreciate that. And, you know, one of the reasons why I was waiting to be able to speak to you on the show is because, you know, I work with a lot of clients who have sleep issues, certainly a lot of women who have specific issues related to menopause and other things later in life. And as we talk about sleep issues, one of the things I try to sort of clarify to people is that you can't just go and treat sleep if you're not eating right, if you're not healthy, if you're not exercising, if you don't have this holistic approach. And that's the thing that drew me to you. And so as I was reading through your book here, I saw it's like, okay, she and I are on the same wavelength here. So I'd really love to hear more from her. So can you open us up by telling us sort of this holistic picture? What does it look like and what got you to put the book together in the first place?
Okay, so if we could take a step back, I think that would be helpful. Yeah, I was really fascinated with the whole idea of longevity, my own personal longevity, but also as we see the population aging, and we do see it aging much more than ever before. I think of it as the longevity revolution. I wanted to know a little bit more about, like, well, what causes some people to live better longer and others not to?
So I looked at your book and I saw that you and I have a lot of similarities in thought about sleep and about health and how it's a holistic approach. And I'd love to hear more from you as to how you got into putting this all together and where did you come into this idea in the first place?
Sure. So I'm really interested in this whole idea of longevity. I mean, how do we not just live longer, but live better? And that's really fascinated me. So we used to believe that genetics were our destiny. That's what science told us. They told us that 70% of our health and well-being had to do with genetics. So, like, it was out of our hands. Who cared? Eat what you want. Drink what you want, exercise or don't exercise, it really doesn't matter. However, the most recent science out of places like Calico Labs, which is part of Alphabet, Google's Alphabet, they have a completely different narrative to tell us. They tell us that almost 90% of our health and well-being has to do with our lifestyle and our environment. So think about that. That is a total game changer. It makes us more or less the CEOs of our own health and well-being.
Right.
So that's point number one. Point number two is that women have really won this longevity revolution. I mean, we've won the longevity lottery, really. We get to live 5 to 6 years longer than men, and that's like a big win. However, when it comes to health span, which is the number of years that you stay healthy in your life, we're not doing so good. In
Really?
fact, women spend the last 12 to 14 years in a cascade of poor health. Things like aches and pains of arthritis, diabetes, heart disease. Women get more heart disease than men. It's kind of scary. And then when it comes to brain span, women are twice as likely to suffer from Alzheimer's disease as men.
Wow.
A
Wow.
scary reality. And we know that cognitive decline is the scariest. Based on research we did at AgeWave, we found that when you ask people what scares you the most about longevity, hands down, it was the idea of getting cognitive decline or Alzheimer's disease.
Yep.
It was
Yep.
crazy. So this whole idea of expanding health span and brain span is very real.
Yeah. I that is an issue that comes up all the time, and I have to answer it all the time. And that's why I started looking into diet and exercise and the holistic approach. And you talk
That's
about the
right.
mind diet and the Mediterranean diet and all these things you hear about when you start talking about long-term longevity. Just out of curiosity, the information that you're talking about in the numbers, are those related to like women in the US or is that worldwide that you're talking
That
about?
is a
Because I don't
global
know if there's a
number.
difference. Oh, really?
Yeah,
Okay.
it's a global number and it's a scary number. And by the way, women living longer than men, that is a global phenomenon. It's not just in the United States.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
Because.
So just to finish answering your question, Andrew, and what I began to realize, actually, it was during COVID when I had a little bit more time on my hand, I realized, well, what is it that makes some people have healthier health spans and healthier brain spans, while others really suffer and go into a state of decline. And so I reached out to my network of physicians, researchers, scientists to ask them, well, what do they think? And what do they tell the women and the men, but mostly the women in this instance that they love? What do they tell them? So what's their secret sauce?
Right.
I wanted to know what the secret sauce was. And Andrew, similar to you, I found out that it's not just about one thing. It's about a holistic bouquet of ingredients that all work together. And if you don't have your sleep together, chances are you're not going to have the energy to exercise. Your metabolic health is going to be impacted pretty dramatically, and you're probably going to crave sugar. If your wealth span, which is the number of years that you have financial well-being, if that's not in place, your cortisol levels are going to go insane and you're going to really impact your sleep. So you can see each of the ingredients impact each of the other ingredients.
And that's so. It's kind of sad that it's only relatively recently that the medical community, the mental health community, and other communities have started to recognize that sleep is not just a throwaway thing that you do at the end of the
Yeah.
day that wastes your time, but it's absolutely relevant to your physical health, your mental health, and all of them combined with each other.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and it's just
Excuse me. Yeah,
yeah.
one of the things that I really discovered during this exploration of sleep science as well as other science, one thing, and you know this, and many of your listeners may know it also, sleep science has really started to morph into circadian rhythm science. We know that it's part of circadian rhythm science. And That's kind of an interesting thing because what we do in the morning is as important to our health and to our sleep as what we do at night. So that's something that many of us don't even think about, which is really unfortunate. So there's another thing that I learned about sleep from Dr. Phyllis Zee at Northwestern, who's a physician as well as a neuroscientist. She told me that of this, and you probably know whether this is true or not. She told me of the sleep research studies that are out there, none of the big ones include people over the age of 65, who, by the way, have the most sleep problems.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, there's so much good research that is going on now because this has become such an area of interest for not
That's right.
just doctors, but for consumers. So the great news is, and as I'm speaking to you, I'm literally sitting in a hotel room because I'm at a sleep conference. Yeah, people are really now paying attention to all the different factors and areas that are
That's right.
important for research for sleep. You know, as you mentioned this, it's you know, two of the big things that I've seen more recently is people in the sleep field specializing in sleep and cancer patients. That's one area.
Oh, that's so interesting.
That's a big one. And the second one, which is really new and ties to what you were talking about, circadian rhythm, is you know, when you think of doctors, you think of like medications for things.
Sure.
And now there's research going on. Not only are you using the right medication, but based upon your circadian rhythm, are you using it at the right time of day for maximum benefit?
Yeah, and that's like, how do you figure that out? Because physicians don't have the time or the knowledge necessarily to answer those questions. So it's a conundrum. One of the other things that I found, because everybody's like obsessed with, oh, you have to get 7 to 9 hours of sleep every night. Well, Dr. Z, who I thought was amazing, good plug for her, at Northwestern, she said to me, you know, I'd rather get 5 hours of really good quality sleep than 7 hours of sleep that's interrupted, that I never get into REM sleep or deep sleep. So I think about that all the time because, you know, sometimes my sleep is great and other times it's just not so great. And that's me personally. And I know all the right things to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, given the world we live in today with just all of the distractions and the electronics and the busy schedules and on and on and on and on, it's very hard to be able to just relax at night because you got so many things spinning through your mind.
Yeah, which I think is very, very interesting. And it's something that I know that, you know, personally I've delved into, but a lot of people don't even have a clue about that, including some physicians. And, you know, they're well-meaning physicians, so it's not like they're trying to do something bad, but physicians are under so much time pressure. And then the knowledge base that they're required to keep up with, it's like overwhelming.
And and this goes back to, I guess, what I was saying about the fact that there's so much research going on now. So we got to give it to the researchers to, you know, the fact that they recognize these situations that need
That's right.
more time and more research, and they're actually able to do it now. So, but with that, let me stop us and take a quick break because I've got to get a commercial in here.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
The Sleep Science Today radio show is just the beginning. Join a community of people interested in sleep using the social media links in the description below. We offer everything from a free sleep support group to live meetup Q&A sessions and events to a Facebook group and so much more. Sleep Science Today is making sleep a participation sport. If you're not signed up, you're missing out. Okay, we're back on Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We are talking with our guest, Maddie Deichwald, and we are talking about sleep and sort of a holistic approach to all things in life that relate to sleep as well as the rest of our health and well-being. So I want to, start this segment off by asking you, when we talk about sort of this holistic recipe, and you had mentioned before health span, brain span, lifespan, and then you said you've recently added joy span. Tell us, how does that, what does that look like for a person?
Okay, so first let's define the terms. We know what lifespan is. It's the number of years you live, chronology, if you will, lifespan. Then we talk about health span. That's pretty simple too. That's the number of healthy years that you live. And that's, that's anything they say on average, women spend the last 12 to 14 years in a cascade of bad health things. It could be simple, like aches and pains. It could be more serious, like heart disease or diabetes, or even worse, Alzheimer's disease, which brings us to the brain span. And to me, because of my personal life, brain span might be the most important thing because my mom and my grandmother both suffered from Alzheimer's disease. So the fear that I have, and by the way, I'm not alone, of Alzheimer's disease is very real. And it's only recent science that has told us that no, only about 30% of those with Alzheimer's disease pertain to a genetic disposition. So just to hear that news was great. Great news for me, because recent science, there's no cure to Alzheimer's disease. And it's not until, by the way, there are some drugs out there that take care of some of the symptoms, but not the disease itself. And that's an important distinction, especially because these drugs have some terrible side effects, especially for women. But the good news is that science has really opened the door to tell us that, oh, what you do in your lifestyle has a lot to do with either preventing or delaying cognitive decline, things like Alzheimer's disease. So that's very good news. That's back to this holistic recipe, because we know that if you have your brain health together, you begin to exercise more, eat a healthier diet, maybe even take care of your finances better, sleep better, and so forth and so on. These little ingredients, this bouquet of ingredients, the cool thing about it is that they don't exist in silos. They influence each other pretty dramatically.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's sort of the whole message is that, you have to have your whole house in order if you're going to have things working properly.
That's exactly right. Some people don't like that, by the way, because it makes us more in charge of our health and well-being. And they'd rather say, oh, no, that's about my doctor, or that's about whatever, genetics.
Right. Well, at least in our society, I don't know about others, but I know about our society that we have been trained through commercials and other things that if you have a problem, you take a pill. Well, there are some great pills out there that do help a lot of things, but there's a lot of pills out there that simply mask symptoms and they don't have anything to do with solving the actual underlying problem. And, it's not, you can't sit down and eat highly processed foods and not exercise and have a really bad sleep hygiene program and expect to sleep well.
Yeah,
It's just not
that's
going to happen.
exactly right. Yeah, I
So.
was actually just in Italy, and when I looked at the diet that people eat in Italy compared to what we eat here, it's kind of crazy. They eat real food. They don't have any, or where I was in the boot of Italy, and it's much more, it's not a city, it's country-like. And the people, I mean, they load up on olive oil, and they believe that extra virgin unprocessed organic olive oil should be on everything, and they swear by it adding to their longevity.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I also recently took a trip not to Italy but to Paris.
Oh,
And
nice.
when I go to these different countries now, I make a point of going to the grocery store that the locals would go to, and I compare it to what I have here in the US. And the grocery stores in Europe that I've been to are all a lot smaller than what we have here.
That's right.
And they don't have the center of the store, which is all the highly processed, you know, preservative laden type of foods. And then I also look at the ingredients. And so, for example, I bought yogurt in Paris and I buy yogurt in the US. Same name brand and everything, totally different ingredients. In Paris, the ingredients were things that were obvious ingredients. In the US, you get a lot of things that you can't pronounce and don't know what they mean, and chemicals and everything else. The taste, entirely different in
Wow.
Paris. It tasted like food. You know, the mouthfeel tasted and felt like food. And I found that I wasn't as tired. I wasn't as run down. I felt better. And this was just 2 weeks. So there's this big difference
That's
in food.
amazing.
Yeah.
That is truly amazing. I mean, it is really require it takes work to eat real food and, get rid of those ultra processed, the seed oils, sugar. Sugar is in everything in the United States. I don't think it's the same everywhere, but certainly in the United States. And the alcohol, like we have, I mean, we use alcohol as a way to deal with stress in many instances. I mean, not everybody, but whereas in many cultures, it's really part of their cultural identity. It's a completely different thing. They'll have a glass of wine with dinner because it feels like the social thing to do rather than drink until you pass out.
Yeah, yes, very, very different. Like, and you said it, there's a difference between a glass of wine with dinner as a cultural thing and a bottle of wine because it's there. Very, very different, you know,
Very
uses and
different.
purposes.
Although the
Right.
most recent science tells us even a glass of wine can have negative effects on your health. It kills brain cells. Not so great. However, I spoke to a brain scientist from, she was outside of Paris and she was doing research on Alzheimer's disease. So I asked her, hey, you're French. Do you drink wine with your dinner or wine at all? And she said, I have so much stress in my life that when I sit down for a meal with my friends and with my family and share a beautiful meal with one glass of wine, I feel like it's actually good for my health because it makes my cortisol levels go down and it counteracts a lot of the negative things that are going on in my body. So I listen to that advice all the time.
Yes. Well, so, you know, as we're talking about this topic and all, you know, and looking at your book, one of the things that you talk about is accelerants and decelerants to
Yeah.
aging well. And I love the way that you phrase that. And I'm wondering if you could tell us more about that. What would be examples of accelerants versus decelerants?
Yeah. Well, I think we've talked about some of it already without putting the label on it. But what I began to realize was there were certain things that made us age and made us age faster, and just to put it very simply, or really eroded our health spans and our brain spans. Like, for instance, when it comes to sleep, having caffeine after noon, it's not going to help your sleep. Let's be honest about it. So, that is something that accelerates your aging process, your health span, and brain span. Having alcohol late at night, we talked about alcohol a little bit. Yeah. Blue light. If you do that after a certain hour, after the sun goes down, in general, keeping with the circadian rhythm concept, it's an accelerant in terms of you aging faster, your health span and brain span being impacted. And Eating like a heavy meal before you go to sleep, not a great thing either. Also an accelerant. One of the scientists that I interviewed was Dr. Walter Longo, and I don't know if you know who that is, but he is the pioneer behind intermittent fasting. He came up with the whole idea, and he said that we have that whole concept of intermittent fasting wrong. Those biohackers at the cutting edge who go 16 to 18 hours, he said that's an accelerant to aging. You're going to have health problems if you do that. The sweet spot for intermittent fasting is 12 to 13 hours. Now, that's pretty doable. However, he did add that you want to be able to finish your last meal of the day at least 3 hours before you go to sleep. Otherwise, if it's less than 3 hours, having that heavy meal right before you go to sleep, that also is an accelerant. So you can see there's some like negative behaviors that you do just to keep it pretty simple. And then on the flip side of that, there's some decelerants, things that you can do to help you live better longer. And I love some of them that I've just tried one that I've never really tried before. I came back from Europe and I was having some jet lag issues, and I get a bad reaction to melatonin, so I couldn't take melatonin. So somebody was telling me, try red light before you go to sleep. I tried red light before I go to sleep, and as it turns out, I slept 7 uninterrupted hours after just coming back from Europe. That's like a 9-hour time difference from California where I live.
Oh,
So,
wow.
yeah, so that is definitely decelerant. It's going to help me live better longer. Sunlight in the mornings to get your circadian rhythms working in the right way, that helps you to live better longer. It's a decelerant. Daily movement. Such a simple thing, building muscle strength. One of the things I talk about in my book is that the most recent science tells us that building muscle strength should actually be a new vital sign, similar to our heart rate and our blood pressure. That's how important it is. So, building muscle strength, getting a little strength training in a couple, 3 times a week, that's going to help you to live better longer. It's a decelerant. So, there's these small habits that either erode or enhance your sleep, your movement, the holistic recipe, if you will, every single day.
Interesting. Well, I want to be able to talk more about that, and I also want to talk a little bit more about women and midlife struggles, because that's a big issue that comes up. But we've got to take a break first, so let's jump to a quick commercial break, and we'll come back and we'll pick up and we'll talk about women and health.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
The Sleep Science Today radio show is just the beginning. Join a community of people interested in sleep using the social media links in the description below. We offer everything from a free sleep support group to live meetup Q&A sessions and events to a Facebook group and so much more. Sleep Science Today is making sleep a participation sport. If you're not signed up, you're missing out. All right, welcome back on Sleep Science Today. We are talking with Maddie Dykewald, and we were just about to start our conversation about women and health. And this is a big issue that I run into all the time with many of my clients. And so I'm curious to find out what have you learned through your research and through your studies and in your book? What have you learned about women and health as relates to sleep in particular?
Yeah. So interestingly, when I was looking to write a book about increasing health span, brain span, and lifespan, I went out and looked at all the other books that were out there and all the information. And what I began to realize was there really wasn't anything out there that was focused specifically on women. And digging even deeper, I began to realize that most medical research, especially until recently, wasn't really focused on women at all. It was focused primarily on men. Now, that's pretty alarming because there's an assumption there that women and men are exactly the same. And gosh, I think by this point we know, that's not the case. It wasn't until 2016 that, and that's like 2016, that's like 9 years ago, that the FDA told pharma companies that they ought to include women in their clinical trials. And they didn't even say they had to include them in equal numbers. So we're still trying to make sense of what helps women to live better longer. Some of it is really unknown. And we're beginning to realize that medical research, medical advice, pharmaceutical products, even over-the-counter products, they're mostly designed for men's bodies. And they don't, they don't always work for women. So that is like at the bottom of what really drove me to write this book. I also began to realize that the whole world of menopause, which is beginning to come out of the closet, if you will, and that's great news. Younger women are saying, hey, I've got these symptoms. And still, there's some gynecologists that dismiss it as just, oh, discomfort. You'll get over it. Well, that is just not true. It is far more than discomfort, it actually has health ramifications that are pretty significant, impacting our gray matter in our brain, our cardiovascular health, and so on. I mean, it has huge, huge impact. And many of the gynecologists out there still do not recommend hormone replacement. And it's based on a flawed study that came out in the early aughts that included, there were a couple of big flaws in the study. I don't know if you want me to go into what the flaws were, but they were using the thing that kind of grosses me out is that they were using progesterone and estrogen from horses, from female horses' urine. So they were using synthetic hormones. And anyone who uses hormone replacement today uses bioavailable hormones. Estrogen, it's usually through a patch. Progesterone, it's usually bioidentical. And that's what you want to be clear that you're doing if you're doing hormone replacement. And if your doctor is against it and you don't have any kind of reproductive hormone cancers in your family, like breast cancer or cervical cancer or ovarian cancer, then find a really good menopause specialist. And they're very available. You can find one online, probably in your area, or you could do it through telemedicine because all of the tests are done. I mean, you can do them remotely. It's blood tests for the most part. So, yeah, that's something that's really totally understood. Now, focusing in for a minute on sleep, 40% of women who are over the age of 40 say that they have sleep disorders. That's like a huge number.
And that's, like I said, that's a big bulk of the people that will come to me. And the typical thing that they say, because the story after a while becomes the same, Oh, I started to have trouble sleeping. I didn't know what was going on. I get woken up in the middle of the night by hot flashes and I can't go back to bed. I went to my doctor. My doctor gave me name the sleep med, and now I'm on this thing and it's not really helping either. It helps a little bit, but not really. And I want to get off these medications. What do I do? That's the story that it just
Yeah, and
repetitive.
we know those sleep medications are not necessarily good for your brain health.
Right. And they're not made for long-term use, number one.
No, they are not. They're somewhat addictive, aren't they? Yes, they
It,
are.
some some of them are addictive. Some of them, or most of them, you know, when I said before, we take pills that kind of mask a symptom as opposed to
That's
address
right.
the problem. Well, those sleep meds, or you know, they're really sedatives or other things. They don't give us restful sleep. They don't get us into stage three sleep. They don't really mimic real sleep
That's
patterns
right.
that are important. So, okay, so we're knocked out, but we're not really getting good sleep. And then we wonder why we don't feel well and we're not refreshed and whatever. It's because you never slept. That's why.
That's
So
right.
that's a big piece of this problem. But then they say, well, but if I try it without the sleep meds, then my hot flashes wake me up.
It's a vicious cycle, and women need to get to the bottom of it for themselves individually. And my co-author, Kate Hanley, was having this problem, and her physician would not put her on any kind of hormone replacement. So I suggested to her, why don't you reach out to someone else? She did. And because of her bone health, the concern, because I mean, if you're having menopause symptoms, chances are your bone health is impacted also, and which can be lead to osteoporosis and, potentially falling and breaking a hip or breaking something, which is very dangerous. So anyway, she did go to an orthopedic specialist, not even to a menopause specialist, and he suggested that she go on hormone replacement, and she did, and now she's fine.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. Yeah,
So,
so
that's like you're not looking for just quick fixes. You want something that's really going to make a difference.
right. So I guess that leads me to sort of the biggest question of all in this whole show, which is, I'm sure people are saying to themselves, okay, so what can I do? What should I be doing differently to improve my holistic life, my sleep, you know, wellness? So tell us about Maddie. Like, what does Maddie do now that you've learned all these things? What have you incorporated in your life that help you improve?
Okay, well, I actually have incorporated a lot of things, some of which have worked better than others. I eat a anti-inflammatory diet primarily, not completely, not every day. I mean, if I want to go out and have pizza, I do. So I don't feel like I should deprive myself of things. However, on a day-to-day basis, I eat real food. There is not an ultra-processed food in my house or a seed oil. In fact, my husband Since I changed my diet, my husband has lost 20 pounds.
Oh,
I haven't lost a pound, but he has
well.
lost 20 pounds. So he is very grateful for this anti-inflammatory diet. And the reason I started it was that I was having excruciating hip pain, really, really bad. I was bone on bone in both my hips because I had hip dysplasia and didn't know it. So I reached out to my network of special researchers and scientists, and Dr. Mark Hyman suggested to me, go on an anti-inflammatory diet. So stop gluten. And by the way, if you're in Europe, you can eat gluten. It's just processed so differently in the United States that it impacted my health anyway. Stop gluten, dairy, and sugar. And I did, and within 6 weeks, all the pain in my hips went away.
Wow.
I am not making that up. So
Wow.
I do that. I'm also a fanatic about working out. I do cardio as well as muscle strengthening. I do Pilates. I go to Pilates at least 3 times a week, which I love because it not only builds strength, but it really works on your balance, your posture. It really is a holistic kind of working out for me. So I love that. I think it's great. Sleep is a challenge for me. I have a lot of stress in my life and I try to manage my stress. But sleep is something that, I'm continuously working on. It has gotten better since I started doing the red light. And I do all the right things. I mean, I worship the sun as soon as I wake up in the morning to get my circadian rhythms going in the right way. I meditate. I mean, I really do try all the right things, but it's complicated for me. I see my, social connections, I think, are really important. So, I make sure that I have dinner with some friends at least a few times a week and get out there. And that's why I like going to group exercise classes. I've made friends there and we get to work out together. It's really super fun. What else? Purpose. I'm obsessed with this whole idea of helping women increase their health span, their brain span, and maybe even their joy span. And with that in mind, I think there's one thing that we sometimes forget about that we ought to all remember, men and women. And that is that studies have been done by Dr. Becca Levy in particular. She was the first in the Midwest of the United States, longitudinal studies that reported that having a more positive attitude about your own aging and those around you who are aging, that it can add up to 7.5 years to your life. And it can reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease by 40%. Now, that doesn't cost a penny. Doesn't take a whole lot of time. Just takes a little bit of sort of rejiggering your mindset. And I love that. I do that every day. And when I'm starting to go negative, which happens, I remind myself about this positivity effect that it can really impact your health and well-being. So those are some of the things I do. What do you do?
A lot of same. I'll give you the real quick rundown. Diet is really important. Like you said, eating actual foods instead of processed chemicals and things. I got rid of all those from my house. Real foods, salads, lean meats, fish, vegetables, fruits. Those are all abundantly available in my home. Exercise is important, as much as sometimes you don't want to have to do it, but you do it anyways. Sleep, getting good sleep is important, and setting up the right environment for good sleep. Keeping your mind active by doing mental things, whether you're taking a class or reading a book or studying something. And the social aspect is important as well. Keeping up with new people, new friends, keeping active that way. So pretty much the same thing that you said.
So it's not rocket science. It's just a matter of doing more of the good and less of the bad.
So with that, unfortunately, we're actually at our time. I do want to remind people, and I have it here, we've got the national bestseller Ageless Aging, and I
All
believe you said
right.
you just came out with the paperback
Yes,
version.
here is the new book. What I love about this new, first of all, it's less money, so it's paperback. But more importantly, there's an entire new chapter where I really focus in on that gut-brain connection, which is huge and is really beginning to get the kind of attention it requires from the medical community.
Great, great. Well, Maddie Dykewald, thank you so much for joining us on Sleep Science today. And we look forward to putting some of these things into practice. I'm sure the audience is excited to go home and give this a try. And we want to keep up with you. And I'm sure there's probably more books coming down the road at some point.
Yeah.
So we'd love to hear about it.
Thanks, Andrew. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight.